Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and at the controls, as always, is our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
Phoning it in today, from the lovely Presque Isle, is our good friend, soon-to-be Dr. Garrett Britton.
Hey, thanks for having me.
He's on the beach right
now. He is, wow, yeah, this could be my favorite phone-in of the season right now. He's up at the beach, enjoying the sun, on a lovely date, I'm sure. And he's taking some time out of his date to talk baseball with us. Well, before we get started talking about all of our injuries, everything else that's going on, there was something that really stood out to me this week as I was looking at some baseball articles. And post-game contributor Tim Livingston wrote a really interesting article on the use of pitchers in modern baseball and how it could kind of evolve in the near future. And the reason that it caught my eye is because it mentioned your potential ace in the making, Trevor Bauer, and they had a few interesting points in the article that they were talking about. One of the first things that really stood out to me was one of the quotes that they had was that casual fans really don't realize the bodily strain of throwing 95 miles an hour.
Right.
You know, they throw that hard for 120 pitches, and then you have to think of all the uncounted pitches, you know, warming up. And, you know, Trevor Bauer has that crazy long toss routine at the beginning where he's throwing javelins and I don't even boulders.
Javelins and boulders, really?
Just doing all that crazy, crazy stuff at the beginning.
Patently false.
And then think about, like, relief pitchers. You know, you have relief pitchers that are going up and down three or four
right.
times a game. And, you know, it's just, it puts a lot of strain. And it's a very, they refer to it as an exhausting endeavor. And there's really no measure of the type of burden that it puts on your arm. So during the article, he went and talked to Tom House, who is the pitching coach in Texas, or who was the pitching coach in Texas, I should say, when Nolan Ryan was there. And this season, he helped rehab Toronto reliever Steve Delabar.
All-star Steve Delabar.
Steve Delabar. And he says that big data is going to be the key in determining the long-term health of a pitcher's arm. Basically, they have now, baseball teams have all of this information that they can collect, and they can look at a pitcher from a broader perspective, and they have kind of an idea of where things are going with their personal health and how their arms can react. And House said, and this is what really jumped out at me, he said he thinks eventually there's going to be 10, 11, 12-man pitching staffs, and nobody will throw more than three innings or 45 to 50 pitches.
So what you're telling me is that Bo Porter is ahead of the curve.
That's what I'm saying.
He's
man.
Revolutionary.
We've got Bo Porter and the Colorado Rockies apparently are just revolutionizing baseball.
Well, you know, and it's funny that it comes to that conclusion because as you're saying it, I'm sitting here thinking, I know what major league teams are going to do with a big pile of data. They're going to be uber conservative. Because that's what we've already seen, right? As we've collected just like a little bit of data, we've gotten more and more conservative. And so like the other night during Tim Lincecum's no-hitter, he threw like 148 pitches. And everybody's like, look at that little hoss, man. He's about wore his arm out where, you know, if like, I'm drawing a total blank. Bob Feller was still alive. He'd be like, 148 pitches.
He's still got 100 to go.
Yeah, I'm only in the fifth inning. What are you talking about? And then I go back tomorrow and throw the last three innings of that game.
You know, it was a really interesting article, and we'll post it with the podcast when we put it up there. So check out at the bottom of the description. But it was a really interesting article, and if you think about it, think about how baseball's evolved even throughout the course of our lifetime, where we've seen Oakland in the Moneyball era look at, you know...
Moneyball's all about college.
It's all about college. All about college and walks. That's all it talks about. But, you know, like, how
Harold Reynolds, 2013.
Harold Reynolds and Joe Morgan, they love that book. But think about, like, how the game's going to evolve and what the next step is going to be. And, you know, I think pitching will be one of those areas of the game to evolve. So with that being said, let's talk about what's going to be on today's show. We're going to have our medical updates from Dr. Garrett. We'll touch on what's happening in Pittsburgh and in Cleveland. Have our Seawolves shout out. Lots going on up at the up there with the Seawolves. And we'll have a quick all-star game discussion at the end before we wrap it up. So let's kick it off with Dr. Garrett and his medical updates.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet.
All right. Well, we're going to start at Cleveland today, where the list is short.
Yeah, Cleveland Clinic's emptying out.
Zach McAllister had his first rehab outing on Saturday at AA Akron, and he was very pleased with his performance. He threw 61 pitches over three and a third innings. And Zach is recovering from this right middle finger sprain that he had surgerized. And kind of the piece that everyone's wondering about is his curve.
Right.
He hasn't thrown it yet, but intends to in his next bullpen session. So we'll see. That's kind of the last piece to fall into place.
Right. He's been throwing it on flat ground.
Right.
He has yet to throw it off a mound.
Off a mound. So he has a bullpen session coming up and another rehab start on Thursday, will be July 18th.
Right.
If all goes well, they're return on July 23rd.
Right. They're hoping that the way the schedule works out coming out of the All-Star break, that he can make the next spot start that the Indians need, you know, where they've been using Carrasco and Salazar. They're hoping they don't have to call anyone up. If they do, though, they can call Danny Salazar up because it'll have been, I think, just like 11 days because of the All-Star break. So they can recall Danny Salazar.
Well, if it goes anything like it has been, you know, he should return without any trouble.
Yeah, we're just waiting to see for him to snap off some of those curveballs and see what happens.
Lou Marson, just an update with him, played catch on Monday from 90 feet. He was pulled off of rehab for that shoulder injury. Placed on 60-day DL July 7th.
Right. They moved him to the 60-day DL to make room for Preston Gilmett.
Mm-hmm.
Because Preston Gilmett, I don't believe, was on the 40-man roster. And when you put someone on the 60-day DL, they don't count against your 40-man.
I see.
But it was basically a procedural move because he's been on the DL for so long. He's eligible to come off anytime, I would imagine, or very soon. He won't be ready whenever he's eligible. Maybe today. I think he was eligible probably the moment they put him on the 60-day DL. He's been on there since, what, April?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So, yeah.
And so he was pulled off of rehab. He's looking to start another rehab assignment in the near future, is all they're saying. Nothing, no date set.
They're being as ambiguous as possible.
The Lou Marson era is fading into obscurity. Lou Marson, I don't even know what would happen. I think they could probably option him back to Columbus at this point, and no one would claim him because of all his shoulder problems.
Right.
He can't hit, and the only thing he could ever do is throw people out. And if he has shoulder problems, I can't imagine anyone's going to want to take a chance on him.
Kind of a requirement.
Yeah.
And then Brett Myers, who is rejoining the club.
Brett Myers.
Still trying to throw off the mound. He was shut down back on July 2nd with elbow pain.
Oh, just.
He had an MRI done after that that showed no changes, so there's no, you know, this might just be what he's left with.
Just get the surgery, Brett. But I understand why he doesn't want to, because surgery for him at this point probably might mean the end of his career.
Yeah.
So he wants to make sure that he doesn't, you know, if he can do anything without getting surgery, he'd rather go that route.
They're definitely exhausting everything they can.
I hope Chris Antonetti got a nice insurance policy on that contract. I can't imagine he wouldn't have with all the injury history, but
we'll see.
Is that it?
That is it for Cleveland.
Two guys who haven't played all year, and one guy who's at least, you know, working his way back, although he's got one big hurdle left. That's good. I'll take that.
All right. Well, let's get over to the new triage in Pittsburgh. I guess Pittsburgh is the new Cleveland when it comes to the injury report here. So where are we starting off with Pittsburgh, Garrett?
They've been having a tough time. They had some good comebacks. I think AJ Burnett, you know, doing his thing. He's off the DL.
Yep, he's made two starts. They both look good.
Yeah. So that's the good news. we're going to start with Jeff Locke.
He's letting us down easy.
Yeah, scratched from the
Sunday's
13th game
right?
And the 14th game.
Yeah, he missed the game on the 14th, and he also has to sit out from the All-Star game. So
right.
He was scratched from
right.
both.
So he was selected to pitch an inning in the All-Star game, but chose not to. This low back tightness is what they're describing it. They haven't really said anything more. It may be something minor. Look for his return soon. James McDonald.
Oh, no.
Placed on 60-day DL on Friday, July 12th. And this
he's eligible to come off any day.
similar to Marson's move, I think it was just procedural to make room on the 40-man.
Yeah, he needs a good shrink right now. That's all he needs.
Yeah. He's still struggling with that right shoulder. The MRI didn't show any structural damage, no tendonitis or tears.
Clean as a whistle.
yeah. Where are? Must be somewhere else.
Where else can we scan? How about a CAT scan?
He was shut down for 2 weeks, starting on the 12th, before they're even going to let him start throwing again. So, and that's really nothing new. We've been following that along.
Right. Yeah. There really is nothing new to update with James McDonald other than Pittsburgh, I think, just is trying to do anything that they can to get him to do anything positive again.
Anything at this point would be a bonus because you don't even need him in your rotation. So
right.
Anything would be good. Just trying to slowly rehab him into something down in the minors would be a win
right.
at this point.
Yeah.
Try and get him to produce. And then Neil Walker, placed on 15-day DL, retroactive to July 7th for a right oblique injury. And the trouble with that is he's a switch hitter, so batting left-handed was really giving him trouble. He elected not to have an MRI. He felt confident that it, you know, just an oblique, and the doctors agreed. Then Phil Irwin...
Filthy Phil.
Underwent ulnar nerve transposition surgery on July 3rd. Placed on 60-day DL. They're planning on him missing 2 months. Now, you would say, ulnar nerve transposition, that sounds a lot like Tommy John. And we know the recovery for that is a lot longer than 2 months.
Yeah, so what is the difference? Do you know the difference? Because that's exactly what I thought when I first heard that.
Yeah, the difference is, in Tommy John, you actually get transplant of tendons to replace the damaged ligaments in the elbow. Whereas in ulnar nerve transmission, it is strictly manipulation of the nerve.
Okay, so
there you go.
So this one is... shorter recovery time.
So they just go in and move the nerve.
Just give it a little...
Yep, they just move it. Because he was having trouble with that ulnar nerve inflammation chronically. They just move it out away from the ligament, and they don't have to cut any of the ligaments. So that's why the recovery is so much shorter.
Oh, good. I hope Filthy Phil is on the road to recovery soon.
And last but not least, Jared Hughes, making improvements in his bullpen sessions. Threw 35 pitches on July 3rd. Everything went well. They moved his rehab to the spring training complex down in Bradenton. So we'll kind of follow that. Seems to be looking okay.
Yeah, good. I mean, Jared Hughes was a good piece in our bullpen last season, so... And I guess we're not having issues with our bullpen, but it's always nice. I don't think you can ever have too much pitching, so I think getting him back would be, you know, obviously a nice piece for the Pirates to work with. So yep. That's all the major news from the injury report for the Pirates there?
That is it.
Well, that wasn't awful. Neil Walker, obviously, I think that was kind of a big blow, but, you know, he should be on the road to recovery soon. If they didn't even take an MRI, I'm assuming that everybody in that scenario thinks that he should be okay soon, so.
Yeah, he should be back, really, in a couple days.
Yeah, that's good. Because don't those kinds of injuries typically, like, if they progress further and further, those side soreness and, like, oblique-type injuries, don't those tend to linger longer
they
than
do.
Other types of
yep.
injuries? So,
If he can get over it soon, take it easy, do the physical therapy stuff, and come back. If he doesn't have any problems, you know, he won't have any problems.
Good. Good. Well, thanks for phoning it in today, Dr. Garrett.
Yeah, no problem.
I hope you get to enjoy that beautiful Lake Erie sunset.
Sun is beautiful right now.
I was going to say, you're breaking up. I think he's already checking out as
That's
we
it.
Speak.
Yep, he's just walking towards the sand.
Yep. He's like, all right, guys, we'll see you later.
All right, Garrett, thanks for phoning in, man.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Well, let's carry on. We're going to lead off with the Pittsburgh Pirates first. And we're going to start off with James McDonald being moved from the 15-day to the 60-day DL, obviously. And that really, you know, at the beginning of the season, if you would have asked me how something like that would have affected the Pittsburgh Pirates, I would have been, I guess, much more hesitant about the Pirates' success without James McDonald in their rotation. But looking at their rotation now and the guys that have stepped up and filled in, you know, James McDonald might be gone and he might not be contributing in the capacity that he was last season in the first half. But now we have Jeff Locke who stepped up and kind of filled that role. So that big move from the 15-day to the 60-day DL, where basically we don't know when we're going to see James McDonald, it's not as devastating as I would have thought at the beginning of the season because of the emergence of Jeff Locke.
Right, and I was going to say something about that. I didn't want to keep Dr. Garrett from the beach any longer because I figured you and I could talk about it. But, you know, who would have thought that the Pirates would be in this positive of a situation at the All-Star break with the record they have, you know, all the success that they've had so far this year, and James McDonald has given you zero. I mean, I don't think anyone would have said, like, James McDonald has to be an ace. You know, he has to return to that form he had for, like, what, a month or two last
yeah.
year? No, that's not what we were saying. But we, going into the season, most people would have thought, if the Pirates are going to be really successful, James McDonald needs to go back to being a solid pitcher. You know, that's one of the key pieces. Nobody thought that that Locke was just going to turn into an absolute stud in the first half and that he's going to make you forget all about James McDonald, you know, and that Garrett Cole was going to be able to come up. I mean, I think we all had high hopes for Garrett Cole, but you just never know. You know, even when you have a lot of talent, you can come up and have a really rough, you know, debut, a really rough couple months. Even if you have all the talent in the world, I just always think about CC Sabathia, you know. He struggled a lot in the first couple of years, and we may still see some of that from Garrett Cole, but to be in the, I mean, they're in the catbird seat here at the All-Star break. They've got nothing from James McDonald, nothing from Carsey. Carstens, yeah. Wandy's missed time. Burnett's missed time, you know, and yet still they have one of the best pitching staffs in baseball.
Yeah, it seems like everybody that they are plugging in is a positive contributor, and that's been one of the biggest, I guess, boons for the Pirates in the first half was, you know, everybody's doing everything right. There's, aside from like Mike Zagurski, there's really been no one who's been a non-contributor this season.
Right. Good old Mike Zagurski. Yeah, he had a rough go of it.
And
we'll
on,
just skip over him.
Yeah, we try and forget Mike Zagurski. But, you know, on the point with Jeff Locke, one of the things that everybody's saying is, you know, he's pitching out of his mind. He's an all-star pitcher. You know, could this be a guy that could anchor your rotation in the future when Burnett's gone? And I think, again, you have to be very, very – this is such a small sample size. He's pitched 109 innings
right.
this year. And if you look at, if you start looking at his advanced statistics, his FIP is 381. His XFIP is 426. He's stranding runners 83% of the time. Yeah. You know, he's got a strand rate of 83%. You know, his BABIP is 228.
Right.
I mean, when you talk about numbers normalizing, those are the kind of numbers that will normalize. And even if Jeff, let's say Jeff Locke is a 3.81 ERA caliber pitcher, that's a good pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good pitcher.
Right.
If your ERA, if you throw 200 innings with an ERA under 4, right, every club's going to want that. So I think he can still be a positive contributor without having to be a 2-1.
Than an ace.
Yeah,
right.
Tim Lincecum in his prime type
right.
pitcher.
And we discussed that a little bit when you weren't here with Bob. You know, Bob and I both agreed that Jeff Locke is pitching, you know, out of his mind right now, and that chances are this won't continue.
Right.
You know, I mean, it could. Who knows? And I said, by the end of it, I said, you know, his ERA, he will finish the year with a good ERA, mainly because he's just racked up so many quality innings that he's going to have to really implode to end up with the ERA more like what we expected from him at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. I said, my thing is, I would maybe look at this year for Jeff Locke with this kind of like Fausto Carmona 2007 lens, you know, because I've seen guys who do it 1 year and then it's
not there.
They can't ever do that again for whatever reason. And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen to Jeff Locke. I just say that's the reason to approach it with caution.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the old baseball adage of he did it once, he can do it again. Yeah, that's true. But that doesn't mean he will do it again.
Exactly.
He could, you know, we saw with Fausto Carmona flashes of it, but he just could never harness it again. Hopefully that's not the way Jeff Locke goes. I don't think he's going to be this top of the rotation leading the National League in ERA starter. I think he could be a 3 starter.
Right. And we talked about that at the beginning of the season. If Jeff Locke reaches his potential and is a good number 3 starter, you know, we said we'd be thrilled with that.
Right. I think that's his ceiling, and his more realistic is like a 4.
Yeah.
You know, and like hopefully he doesn't go back to being a 5. I think he's more like a 3-4 if he can continue to do the things he's doing. But yeah, when you look at his stats, there's a lot of things that kind of brace you for the coming return to normalcy with Locke, you know, and that's why, to go back to our original point, it's so nice that the Pirates have had success with Cole, success with Wandy, success with Burnett, you know, because I don't know how much longer the Jeff Locke course will be able to carry the team. You know, I think as you go into these last 2 months, I think for the Pirates' sake, they need to see more of that burden shift towards Burnett and the more veteran pitchers. Hopefully Cole can pick some of that up because he's young, you know, and he can help them kind of finish with that burst, you know, through the end.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting.
And Cole has the stuff to be that,
sure,
that top of the rotation starter that you need. I mean, you know, we went to his debut. He's throwing 100-mile-an-hour
sure.
fastballs.
No, I'm not saying he doesn't have the stuff for it. I'm just saying it's tough to rely on that guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I guess the difference between Gerrit Cole and Jeff Locke would be, you know, the stuff is completely different.
Right.
The arsenal's different.
Right, exactly.
You know, Cole has 2++ pitches and, you know,
well,
another
just,
plus pitch.
It's like, you know, the Indians trying to ride Jarrett Wright in that series, that playoff run in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, that was kind of one of those Jeff Locke, Fausto Carmona situations. You know what I mean? Where like that year, man, he was just lightning in a bottle. Like, and he was okay in years after that, but it was never like that
like
again.
That, yeah.
You know, those guys have a tendency to not be able to sustain that through the season and especially into the playoffs, because as we're talking about, that mean catches up to you eventually.
Right.
And the more games you play, the more chance you have, you're going to start putting up some duds you're going to put up some clunkers to make up for the really good ones you had in the beginning
right.
of the year.
And that's the difference, I think, between a number one starter
right.
and a number 3 or 4 starter. You know, a number one starter is going to give you consistent outings throughout the course of the season, whereas your number 3 and 4 starters, maybe they pitch like a 1 right. for a few weeks, and then you kind of go back and, you know, those numbers normalize.
Then they have some bad outings. Then they have a string of average outings. Then they get their groove again.
Right.
Pitch, you know, it's kind of this, like, up and down with them where you hope, if you have a true number one starter, that you know exactly what's going to happen every time they come out to the mound.
Exactly. So, yeah, the pitching staff has been phenomenal despite some of the things that if you told me at the beginning of the season were going to happen, I would have been nervous about. Some moves. Pittsburgh traded minor league reliever Tim Alderson. He was acquired in the Freddie Sanchez deal to San Francisco.
For
former batting champion Freddie Sanchez.
Yeah, former batting champion.
For infielder Russ Kansler. Our return was Russ Kansler.
You don't want this deal.
So
I saw Russ Kansler play. I think I read it in the article for this trade. It was Russ Kansler has played a total of 29 games in the major leagues, 26 for the Indians and like 3 for the, I don't even know who. This guy got DFA'd like 3 times this offseason.
I don't understand the move personally. It's not even like a lateral move to me. It seems
to me, and I don't know the Pirates farm system. And I mean, I don't think it's something to get excited about. Like, oh, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, but to me, looking at Alderson's numbers, he looked like a serviceable reliever. I really don't think Russ Kansler is serviceable.
Yeah.
You know, like you're saying, I don't think it's a lateral move. I mean, you gave up a prospect is kind of a weird word with a player like this.
Yeah.
Because he's not really a prospect. He's like an organization guy. You know, and he might be able to come up and fill a back spot in your bullpen or something like that. But you gave up something of value, albeit very little value, you know, the way that players are valued in the major leagues, for a guy that got DFA'd 3 times.
Yeah. Oh,
that's what doesn't make sense to me. It's like, wait a couple weeks, you probably get DFA'd again, you could have him for nothing.
And this is something like nobody's writing about it, so you can't get more information
right.
about
everybody
it.
Everybody just wants to forget about it. They're la, 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 la.
I'm just wondering, like, maybe did they need someone in Indianapolis? Like, we need a warm body here, because...
Well, it's possible.
That's the only thing I could really think of as far as...
Who had Russ Kansler? San Francisco. No, wait.
No.
That's you. Okay. I'm looking at your notes. That's your Freddie Sanchez deal.
Yeah, that was where we got. That was Kansler.
Right.
San Francisco was where we got Alderson from when we traded
for Sanchez.
Freddie Sanchez. I want to say Kansler was with Tampa.
Because that's where he started his career. He came from Tampa to the Indians. The Indians DFA'd him. He went to Baltimore, I think. And then they DFA'd him. Then he went to the Yankees, or maybe it was the other way around.
He was with Baltimore. Yep, that was where he was.
Okay, so it was Rays, Indians, Yankees, Baltimore.
Yeah, actually, it's on BaseballReference.com. Started out with Chicago when he was 18 years old.
Oh, there you
go. He was with Chicago until he was 24. Maxed out at Double A, Triple A with Tampa, Triple A with Cleveland, and then Baltimore, and then Pittsburgh so far. So
yeah, he was in the Yankees organization for like 2 days, just long enough to shave his beard.
He's had a nice nice fun little journey through a lot of different systems there.
Yeah, I don't know, I mean, like I said, it's nothing to get too excited about, but I don't understand.
Yeah,
whoever the Orioles, I guess they held out for Tim Alderson.
Yeah, hey, good for them.
More than I would have expected to get.
Good for them. For Russ Kansler, yeah, I would have asked for a bat,
bag of balls.
With Pittsburgh, Dilson Herrera and Gregory Polanco were both named to the Futures game. That took place at 2 o'clock on ESPN2. And it was kind of a neat thing to see your prospects being talked about in such wide regard, especially because they're not names. You know, like with Pittsburgh, it's Jameson Taillon and Gerrit Cole that everybody wants to talk about. Now we're starting to get a little bit deeper. Well, here's our third or fourth best prospect with Polanco. And now here's one of our better infield prospects with Dilson Herrera. And it was kind of neat to see that as far as, being a Pirates fan, goes. And if you have an opportunity, you know, I DVR'd it because I was watching the actual Pirates game that day. And I watched the first half, of the game before I had to move on to some other obligations, but, I'm gonna go back and finish watching the second half. And it's a great opportunity just to familiarize yourself with what goes on
in everybody's
system. So if you get a chance, I would strongly urge, go read everything you can about it. Go watch the game if you have a chance. Mark Melanson, one of the better articles that I read this week as well, was talking about Mark Melanson and how he made some adjustments after his season with Boston last year. And, you know, when he was in that trade last year, he was kind of ballyhooed as like, oh, well, this could be a guy that, you know, he could step in and close for us. And, you know, he didn't pitch well in Boston at all. And they were someone asked him, do you think it's a market thing? You know, was Boston just too much pressure for you? And he said, it's never been the market. He said, you know, it's always been something that you know, I needed to make adjustments and I just wasn't doing. Anyway, right. It was kind of neat to hear him talk about that with the Providence Journal. So that was kind of an interesting little insight into his mentality, where he never really thought that he couldn't be the caliber of pitcher that he is. He was always confident in himself, and he really wasn't worried about the results last year. And it's kind of interesting just to see that mentality of a baseball player who he really, really, you know, his first two outings gave up like 11 runs in two innings or something ridiculous right. like that. So it was interesting to hear that mentality, you know, a guy who got sent down to AAA and how much he believed in himself. Last thing I want to talk about, MLB trade rumors, was talking about how the Pittsburgh Pirates might be interested in Cubs outfielder Nate Sheerholz. I don't know. It's not a sexy trade at all. It's not the Giancarlo Stanton trade that you're thinking about.
It is not. Now, let me ask you, maybe you're going to talk about this. When I saw the rumor, you know, because they're talking about they're not getting a lot of production out of right field, I just thought, I mean, I don't watch a lot of National League games. I'll be honest, because, you know, I see American League teams, of course, as they play the Indians, and you only see snippets of other games throughout the night. But the last time I watched Nate Sheerholz was with the Giants during the playoffs. I'm not sure how much of an upgrade he is. Right. I mean, he might be a little more mobile than Travis Snyder or Garrett Jones or whoever they're running out.
Jose Tabata or whoever you're trotting out.
Whoever you're running out there. I can definitely get down with the idea that he's a better defender, because he's always been a pretty good defender. But I didn't know that that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about production out of right field.
Exactly. Well, and one of the reasons that I found that rumor to be interesting was because on MLB trade rumors, they had general manager Neil Huntington on there and talking about how Pittsburgh's not scoring any runs. They were, at the time, they were 25th in Major League Baseball, 3.84 runs scored a game.
Which is the scary stat when you talk about the pitching staff.
Right.
You know what I mean?
If that staff regresses at all, that 3.84 runs,
that's a scary stat, because you know what's gotten you this far is an amazing bullpen and a great starting staff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like
we're on thin ice. There's a very small margin,
especially
of
when you look at those Jeff Locke stats.
Yeah. But so Neil Huntington had said that we have weaknesses. He said, what we don't have are desperate weaknesses. He said, experience,
I agree with that.
Experience of the last two Julys won't affect what we do or don't do this trade deadline. He said, and this was the other poignant thing that he said, they don't give out half-season awards. You always stay hungry. And that was where I was like, okay. So you're saying you're not going to let anything that happens the last 2 years affect what you do at the trade deadline. Well, you've seen what's happened the last 2 years. So you have to be fairly confident in what you have this season and what they're going to do in the second half of this season in order to say they don't give out half-season awards when you're saying we're not going to let what happens the last 2 years
right.
affect what we do. That's all. I was kind of stunned by that. I feel like
I think he's just trying to say I'm not going to do something drastic.
Right.
To try to bolster this team in the second half because we faded so badly the last 2 years. But I know what you mean. It's like,
and I feel like kind of what he's saying there is maybe the general manager that takes over after me will be very thankful that I didn't trade away all those prospects for him, because if they collapse in the second
after
half,
we tank this year,
someone's head's going to roll.
And it's probably going to be me.
And I guess it's not going to be Andrew McCutchen. That's just a hunch. So
I think you're safe on that. Yeah.
So that was it out of Pittsburgh. We'll post some of those links on there so you can check out some of those articles. Some pretty good reading this week. So let's move on to Cleveland. The big news in Cleveland, Jason. We got to lead off with this because I saw this and I got a little excited myself.
Ooh. Oh.
Francisco Lindor promoted to Double A Akron after the Futures game.
Promoted to Double A Akron after the Futures game. He arrived.
Was it last night? I saw
Akron.
Him on Twitter.
He arrived in Akron last night after the game.
Yeah.
So we'll probably play tonight. This is interesting. This is interesting because in Akron, we've got Jose Ramirez and Ronnie Rodriguez. Now, this move was announced Sunday, maybe earlier than that, Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday. At the time, it was a question of, okay, so who's being traded or promoted? Jose Ramirez or Ronnie Rodriguez? Because the problem is, Rodriguez and Ramirez are getting reps at shortstop. And so the issue becomes when you add Lindor to the mix, even like some kind of shortstop, second base rotation, some kind of second base shortstop DH rotation for the three of them, that doesn't cut it because you're trying to get these guys time playing shortstop.
Right.
You know, like if you're going to let Lindor play shortstop 5 days a week, that only leaves 2 days a week to split between Jose Ramirez and Ronnie Rodriguez. And even if you declare, okay, fine, one of you's a second baseman, well, the other one's only getting 2 days a week playing shortstop. He's not going to get any better. Well, Jose Ramirez took care of that problem on Sunday, I think, when he injured his quad, I think, running out of triple, I want to say. He injured his leg during the game. So Jose Ramirez solved that a little bit. But mm-hmm. I would expect Ronnie Rodriguez to be promoted soon, probably when Jose Ramirez returns. Jose Ramirez is very young and skipped high A. And he's just beginning to really adjust to Double A. He's proving that was the right decision and that he can handle the level. But Ronnie Rodriguez is having a very good season in Akron. And he's the older player, the more, you know, advanced player. I would expect him to be moved up. Plus, who's he going to bump out of Columbus? Juan Diaz? I mean, I think Ronnie Rodriguez is ready to ascend to the throne of Juan Diaz. It's, you know, if you want to talk trade, it's interesting, of course, because it comes back to this mishmash problem of so many middle infielders, and the success of Joe Wendell this year has just made it even more complicated. They thought they were solving things by moving Tony Wolters behind the plate, not realizing they were going to get this guy who was just going to absolutely break on offense that you has had to keep playing. And from what I understand, which this is interesting, Tony Wolters is taking ground balls at shortstop and second base for a long time before every game. So this is not... You know, whether that's a trade thing or whether that's we want to maintain your skills there in case we trade some of these guys and we want to move you back to a middle infield position, whatever the reason is, from what I've been told, he's taking a lot of ground balls every day at second and short. And he is catching in games now, but he's also taking a lot of ground balls. So whatever that tells you.
Makes you wonder. makes you wonder a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I like Ronnie Rodriguez and I like Jose Ramirez and I like all these guys. And I think it's just, you know, great that we have built up this depth. But this depth just screams pick one and let's build a trade around him.
Yep.
I also heard a rumor that the Cubs just think the moon and stars of Jose Ramirez, of course. So maybe that was a bad thing that he injured his quad over the weekend. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I wouldn't be, it's one of those things. I wouldn't be shocked if we're sitting here August 1st and none of these guys are gone, because I think the Indians have a similar mentality to Neil Huntington of like, I'm not going to do anything rash. nothing that we have is this desperate, desperate need that I just need to unload all these assets I've spent the last couple of years building. You know, and the Indian system's behind the pirate system, but it is really increasing in value. They just have no starting pitching prospects. They have tons of position player prospects, but no starters. But I wouldn't be shocked if they're all still here in August, and I wouldn't be shocked if a handful of them are gone. I think it has to be the right,
just the right,
the
return.
Right, the right deal.
Yeah.
And you know, like the Matt Garza thing is rumored a lot, and we see things on MLB trade rumors that Matt Garza will be traded this week is the new rumor. The Matt Garza thing, you know, it kind of scares me because not only is he only signed for this year, and that. I don't like that, but I think, well, maybe we could get him without giving up as much because he's only signed for this year, you know, because I think he's the kind of guy the Indians would target as a free agent. And maybe they think, well, we'll give up a little bit to get him, and maybe that'll give us a little edge, you know. And they were ready to spend some serious money on Edwin Jackson. So if you're going to spend that kind of money on Edwin Jackson, I think you're ready to spend it on Matt Garza. The thing that kind of I wonder about, though, is all of a sudden now the Cubs are having contract negotiations with Matt Garza. And it's one of those things like, is this, are they, we talked last week about how the teams that come up with new ways to do things are the real geniuses, you know? And the thing that Billy Beane started doing with Carlos Gonzalez and those guys when he traded them, and Dan Heron, is he realized, if I don't trade someone as a rental player, I can get even more for them. Like, if I trade someone with 2 years of contract or 3 years, I can demand three times as much.
Whatever I want, yeah.
Because you're not getting a guy for 2 months. You're getting him for 3 years. And I wonder if it's that, if the Cubs are trying to sign him to then trade him and get more in return because they're looking at it and saying, he's the only thing on the market that's decent. We can already command a lot, but if he wasn't a rental, we could command even more. And maybe some of these teams like the Indians, you know, that are looking more at a long-term thing would be willing. The other thing I wonder is if they're just talking to him and relaying those numbers back to the teams that are interested. Like if they're telling Chris Antonetti, well, he turned down this offer, or he's looking more for this, you know, or these are the numbers he's been saying, so that Chris Antonetti's either like, nope, or he's like, really? So I think it's going to be interesting what happens there. Unfortunately, I'm not sure the trade deadline is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot. I guess we'll get to that in a minute, maybe. I want to talk about Danny Salazar first.
Oh, Danny Salazar.
He came up last week for, I think it was the Thursday game. It was a day game. I can't get the days right. My days are all mixed up. But it was a day game. I had to watch the start from the little, like, game tracker thing at work. And I was just, like, staring at that big honking zero in the hit column, and I'm watching it go by, and it's like Alex Rios strikes out, so and so strikes out, or they're playing the White Sox or the Royals?
I think it was White Sox.
Yeah, it was Alex Rios strike out. This guy strikes out. Alexei Ramirez strikes out. I was like, holy cow! And you know, and then afterwards, I'm looking about how he's hitting 99, and his slider, I guess, from what I understand, is actually more of a slurve. So it's not like a true slider. But I mean, that was exactly what the Indians needed.
His start, by the way, against Toronto, not
Toronto,
not Chicago.
Yeah, so that's what it was. It was, yeah, because he was striking out Jose Bautista and Encarnacion and Lind and all those guys. That was exactly what the Indians needed. Of course, kind of coming full circle here, what you wonder after that is, so does that make Chris Antonetti more likely to include Danny Salazar in a trade or less likely? As far as, you know, what kind of the Indians are thinking long-term, Danny Salazar, he's coming back from Tommy John. So he's on an innings limit this year. So don't think that Danny Salazar is the white horse that the Indians are going to ride into the playoffs. If Zach McAllister isn't ready to make his start after the All-Star break, that's going to be Danny Salazar's start. There's no way you only give him one start after he no hits the Blue Jays for five innings.
Yeah.
But as far as the long term in the rotation, he's not going to stay in the rotation all year. He can't. He's going to hit that limit. But if you're the Indians, this is a guy that you didn't draft him, but you did sign him internationally and develop him from nothing. You know, this is actually a homegrown pitching prospect. And so to me, I don't want to trade him. Because it's like, isn't this what our problem has been for the last 10 years? That we can't develop a pitcher? To me, it's like, I don't care if he is a fifth starter. He's going to be more cost effective than trading four guys for Matt Garza. And the ceiling of him is probably more like a three starter, you know? So I hope they don't trade him. But I can see how it would be perfect if McAllister came back and Danny Salazar didn't have to start the rest of the year. Because that's your perfect trade chip, you know? You bring him up and he has this amazing performance. Start. And then you're like, well, we could put Danny Salazar in there. I don't know what they're going to do there, but it definitely was a really good day for the Indians organization, not only to have him come up and have a great start, but that he came up, had a great start, and that he's a homegrown prospect, because they haven't had that.
And he was your 10th ranked Cleveland prospect at the beginning of the season, so he was definitely a player to keep an eye on.
He's a guy that has always had a lot of talent. He's been slowed by that Tommy John a little bit. But I mean, everybody saw the stuff. I mean, he's got amazing stuff. So I think we'll maybe see him make a couple starts, because I have my doubts about Zach McAllister being ready to come back, next week.
Yeah.
But, like I said, he won't be in the rotation long term, because he has that limit from his injury. They're watching him pretty closely.
Yeah. So let me ask you about Asdrubal Cabrera and talk about him on the trade market. What's going on with Asdrubal right now?
Yeah, the Asdrubal Cabrera rumors have surfaced again. You know, they talked about it last trade deadline, talked about it during the offseason, and the Cardinals still need a shortstop, and the Indians still need a pitcher.
I can tell you, as a Pirates fan, I'm hoping that there is no truth to these rumors whatsoever, because that just stretches out St. Louis's lineup even further.
Right, he would look good in that lineup. He'd do a lot for it. And he'd be there next year, too, because he signed through next year. The rumors that I've heard is a one-for-one swap, like Asdrubal for Michael Wacha, Asdrubal for pick one of their starters. I don't know if that's what would transpire, you know, because like I was talking about earlier, he does have that extra year. So I don't know if the Indians could get something else out of them. If they did, it would probably be minor, you know, another arm. I don't know. Maybe they could package up some of their right-handed bullpen arms and get a young starter back. Or, you know, there's been talk maybe they have a glut of right-handed minor league arms for the bullpen. Could they find a team, maybe not necessarily the Cardinals, where it's kind of I'll give you two righties, you give me one lefty kind of deal. I don't know. We'll see. I don't think although the Cardinals have had bullpen issues, I'm not sure they're ready to take Chris Perez back. Although that would be a deal. I'm just throwing that out there.
But that would be very interesting to see.
Yeah. Perez and Cabrera for Wacha, and there is rumor that it would be like Wacha and Descalso, because Antonetti would like require some kind of middle infielder, because he's getting, he's going to be down to one major league middle infielder if he makes that trade. So I don't know. We'll see. I think we want to make sure we talk about the Seawolves here before we run out of time. They've had a lot of action up at the Seawolves, Seawolves Stadium. The UT, yeah.
Yeah.
Drew a blank there.
At Jerry UT. Yeah, there's been a lot going on up at the UT. If you've been keeping an eye on the Detroit Tigers at all, and we've talked about this before, how Detroit is an aggressive organization when it comes to promoting their players.
Yeah.
They've been really aggressive with one of their middle infielders, Omar Infante. One on the DL, and their replacement was from Double A Erie. They called up Hernan Perez, who, if you've been following the Seawolves at all, he's been a human highlight reel. He was actually on SportsCenter for a play that he made back a few weeks ago. Great infielder. A lot of fun to watch at the Double A level. Not a player I ever would have thought in a million years.
That's the Tigers.
Would have been the heir apparent to Omar Infante at second base this season.
Yeah. Didn't Infante hurt himself on a dirty slide?
You know, I'm not sure how he went down. He was on my fantasy team at one point, and I remember I just clicked on his little...
While you're talking, I might have to research that so I don't, insult Omar Infante, if not appropriate. But I feel like he did. But yeah, the old Double A to majors... Tigers are famous for that move.
Yeah, and I think Perez had a cup of coffee last season when they expanded rosters. I think he had two at bats last season. But you know, this was we have a player down. We need someone to replace him. Call up,
right?
Where you know he's had 14 at bats. Two hits and 14 at bats. He struck out five times. I've seen a couple of his at bats, and he does seem overmatched to put it lightly.
But you know, the Tigers farm system, they probably don't have anyone better.
Right. So it was
probably like, well,
I mean, it was cool because if you follow the Erie Seawolves, it's obviously neat to see those players make that transition to the major leagues. I will not be shocked at all when he gets sent back down to Double A Erie, though, to finish out the season down there, because he's, 22 years old. He's still relatively young. So Hernan Perez promoted to Detroit. You can keep an eye on him there for the remainder of the season while he's up there. And kind of the inverse of that, Ramon Cabrera, who was promoted up to AAA Toledo, was demoted back to AA Erie. Which, it was such a small sample size that he spent up in Toledo. I was really surprised to see him back in Erie.
Well, obviously they don't think he's ready.
Well, and the game we went to the last time where we saw him play, I mean, he just laces the ball. His swing is so short and compact, and when he hits the ball, he hits it hard. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they think he has something that he needs to work on back in Erie, and without being privy to those discussions, I'm not sure what it is, but he doesn't have a whole lot left to prove in Double A, I don't think. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm happy he's back in Erie because I love watching the dynamic duo of Ramon Cabrera and James McCann. You know, two catchers flip flopping back and forth between catching and DH, and it's a lot of fun for me to watch. But I won't be shocked if he's back in Toledo at some point, because he's a very good hitter. He really is. He's got a great swing. So then the last thing I wanted to touch on was the Andy Van Slyke meet and greet that took place, which I'd bought tickets to as soon as I heard it, because Andy Van Slyke was growing up one of my favorite players to watch. And I had an opportunity to meet Andy Van Slyke at the meet and greet. It was against the Harrisburg Senators on July 11th, and went down, had an opportunity to, tell him, like, hey, I was a huge fan of yours when I was a kid. That was like one of the coolest baseball experiences I've ever had, meeting Andy Van Slyke. So that was a pretty neat promotion that the Seawolves had going on at Jerry UT. And, even though they're not affiliated with the Pirates, I think they still seem to understand the connection that the Seawolves had. You know, when they became the Seawolves for the first time, they were, they were a Pirates single-A affiliate. And so they understand this area still has an affinity for the Pirates, and it was a cool promotion, a great experience if you were there. He signed autographs for way longer than he needed to. He signed way more autographs than he needed to. But he sat there the whole time, was pleasant, smiling, happy, took pictures with everybody. It was a very cool experience for me to have growing up a Pirates fan. So Last thing we're going to touch on today, All-Star Game getting ready to take place in about 26 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
real quick, Jason, let's hear, who's your pick tonight, AL or NL in this All-Star Game?
I'm going to go with the AL. I'm going to wish upon a star that Jim Leland's dream comes true, that they have a lead in the ninth inning and he can put the greatest closer of all time out there to try to save it.
Oh, that would be a very romantic ending to Mariano Rivera's all-star career.
It's an all-star game, so if that were to happen, the score would probably be like 17-15 or something like that. But I'll still go with the AL.
All right, you're going with the AL? I'm going to have to politely disagree with you.
Oh.
And I'm gonna go with the NL. I think Matt Harvey's going to come out, strike out the side right away, and announce his presence with authority.
You haven't been witness to too many Max Scherzer starts this year. He could equal that.
My favorite part about Matt Harvey, though, is he gets to go out there and face Mike Trout, Robinson Cano, and Miguel Cabrera.
I know.
Assuming he somehow survives those, then he gets a little break before he faces Chris Davis, Jose Bautista, and David Ortiz.
Yeah, well, Jim Leland, in that same press conference where he talked about, you know, having Mo close out the game, they asked him how he put his lineup together, and he said, I put Trout at the top and then just grouped a bunch of power hitters together. You got the best guys in the league. You can't really mess it up.
They should just get regular people to put the lineups together because yeah, let's bat Chris Davis lead off. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Nobody. The worst player in their lineup is J.J. Hardy hitting ninth. So
yeah, and he probably bats, like second or fifth for the Orioles.
Yeah, he's having a nice little season for himself. He's hitting .251 this season, 16 home runs.
Yeah, and he probably bats like either second or like kind of down in one of the like secondary cleanup spots,
right,
like fifth or sixth or something like that. And he's batting ninth.
Here's what I think will make the difference. Mark Melancon.
Oh my goodness.
The Melancon to Greeley connection.
What if
makes
Melancon,
the difference in this All-Star?
What if
game?
Melancon doesn't even get into the game?
He's going to, because the National League's going to have that lead at some point. And Boach is going to go, who do I need to shut down this inning?
I'm going to lay this out there. What if Mark Melancon goes out there and gets lit up and then is horrible the rest of the year?
Not even going to happen. Not even concerned.
I've seen it happen.
Not even concerned about
I've
it.
I've seen it happen with other relievers.
He's going to come in there and face one of those Joe Schmoes that's going to be coming off the bench.
Frankly,
for the American League.
This is my counter argument to what we discussed last week with the lack of middle relievers. I think maybe it's to their benefit. Because generally the middle reliever comes in, you know, and like he's got, even if he's facing the Tigers, it's like Prince, Miggy, and Peralta, right? But then he gets into like Infante and, you know, Tuya Sofo and like these guys, right? So he gets a little break. This is going to be just like murderer's row. It doesn't even matter if it's the eighth inning because you've got guys on the bench like Kipnis and like you got these guys sitting around who are like, they're all-stars because it's the all-star game.
Because it's the all-star game.
What if he just goes out there and gets lit?
There will be a part of me that'll die tonight if that happens.
I'm just saying, because I don't want it to happen, but I've seen it. We've all seen it happen. That guy comes out, you know, an old, what's his face there on Fox. He's reading off, he's never seen the guy before because he doesn't play for like one of the major teams, you know, and he's like, oh, 70 strikeouts in 50 innings, and boy, he's got a great slider, and all this, and he's bam, hit to the outfield, bam, hit to the outfield, bam, double. Well, that's gonna be it for him. Jim Leland's seen enough.
I have faith in Mark Melancon's skills. He's gonna come in 1-2-3, sit them all down. Melancon to Greeley connection. Happening in the All-Star game tonight.
You heard it here first, folks.
Locking it down for the National
League. Just to get it out there, Omar Infante was injured by a dirty slide from Colby Rasmus. I'm watching it on the internet right now. Infante, his lead foot, he throws right-handed, so his left foot is on the back of the bag, and Infante's foot hits him. His butt lands on the base. That's the first part of Rasmus to hit the base.
He like ninja kicks him.
Yeah, he slides into the base, and the first thing that hits the base is his butt.
Dirty.
It's pretty dirty when you watch it. It's pretty bad. But anyway, I just wanted to clear that. It wasn't dirty on Infante's part. It's Colby Rasmus.
So Detroit fans, make sure you remember that. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today. Make sure you guys tune into the All-Star Game tonight. It'll be taking place at 8 o'clock, about 10 minutes from right now. We'd like to thank our listeners and, again, ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. We'd appreciate that. We would also like to say, if you'd like to check us out on the interwebs, you can at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com, and you can follow us on the Twitter, @tristatebb. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So, for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Don't watch that slowly softball game. It's awful.